episode 17 of the Never Iron Anything podcast. This podcast has been created to keep you occupied during the virus lockdown, which has shifted a little bit in the last couple of days, but still is here. My name's Tony Esmond, writer of Monster Spotters Club and Atomic Hercules, and the editor of the forthcoming graphic novel, The Horizon Cafe, created by Emanuela Milleri. Today we have comics creator, famed for his long-running and kick-ass Vanguard series, and also a man who is currently finishing up the art duties on El Marvo, issue 2. Yes, it's Daniel Guns Butcher. Hey, Dan.
Hello, Tony.
that's weird.
How are you?
Doesn't it feel weird?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a podcast we're both on that's not the APC.
Yeah.
ACP, even. Yeah.
So the aim of today's episode is giving you an overview of a single arc in a one comic series, a comic series that jumped about a bit between companies and stuff, and even sort of characters, really, in a way.
Yeah, I mean, it literally, like, it's virtually been to every single publisher under the planet.
Isn't it? Yeah. And it sort of has been a series of team-ups and a couple of novels or short novellas that are put into a novel and all sorts of things. So did you want to tell us what we're going to be reading, Daniel?
Yes, we're reading the classic Martial Law.
Excellent. So we have chosen to do Martial Law issues 1 to 6, which ran from October 1987 to March 1988. It is known retrospectively as Fear and Loathing. It wasn't called that at the time. I think it was just part of the series, I think, wasn't it?
Right, okay.
Created by Pat Mills and Kevin O'Neill, who we undoubtedly will be speaking about in a minute. Just a little summary, because it's not the most straightforward, but probably those who've heard of it haven't. There's a lot of people who won't have read it, sadly. And Martial Law is a sort of a fixture, really. People talk, oh, Martial Law. You know, a lot of people won't know what it's about. So it's Martial Law is a hero hunter. Yes, you heard me right. He's not a villain hunter. He's a hero hunter. And this book follows him. And it is of a kind, in a way, it's a kind of a whodunit at points.
Yeah.
He's employed by San Futuro. Is that right, D?
That's right.
Yeah. San Futuro PD. And he hunts down the sort of rogue capes who commit probably some of the worst crimes you'll see in comics, to be fair.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the public spirit, who's kind of the darling Captain America, Superman kind of analog character, a.k.a. Colonel Buck Kane, is the big sort of superhero cheese. From the outside, as you know, we even just from some of the covers, you'll know this, he seems this sort of clean-cut and all-American hero, which he is not to the extreme. Meanwhile, the sort of second part of the story is there's a character called the Sleep Man, and he's raping and killing hookers, strippers, and sort of, I suppose, kind of cosplayers, actually. So an early reference to cosplay, isn't it?
Yeah, basically everyone dressed like another character from the book.
Which is Celeste, isn't it? Is that right?
Celeste. Yeah, Celeste.
Yeah. And he's very, he's horrific. He's
he's horrible.
He's Jack the Ripper. He's the Yorkshire Ripper. He's that sort of, his gloves are knives. He wears a paper bag on his head. His flesh is putrefying. He's just disgusting. He's the epitome of the big evil, which...
Yeah, we can go into his character later because it ties into one of the themes of the comic.
Yes, it does. Yeah, definitely. Now, Martial Law investigates this, and he is also at the same time investigating the public spirit. He heads headlong into both of them. He clashes with them both, as well as a sort of million other freaks throughout it. Now, the other part of this is he's also very funny in a bleak and dark way. It's a very funny book,
really,
as well.
really dark sense of humor throughout.
It really is, isn't it? It's got a tone that is so individual to Pat and Kevin. It really has. It's hard to put your finger on the different feeling to it compared to other comics.
If either Pat or Kevin were replaced in this with another creator, it wouldn't work.
I think you're right. Yeah.
If it was Pat was writing it and someone's drawing, wouldn't work. If it was Kevin drawing and someone else writing, wouldn't work.
Yeah.
I just can't see it working about those two.
I think you're totally right, man. Yeah, I agree. And I wouldn't want it otherwise, to be fair.
No.
I think, yeah. I have to say, I think Kevin O'Neill has retired, isn't he? I think if...
I believe so.
Yeah, which is a shame. So we might not be getting any more, but we've had those text novels. No more law. So, dude, where did you first encounter... Let's start with the creators. So where did you first encounter Pat and Kev? Was it on this book or was it elsewhere?
No, it was in two... I think I can remember being like away on the seaside... like in the UK,
right.
Like as a kid, and then like desperately just picking up whatever comics I could because I was bored as fuck, as you are on those kind of holidays.
Yeah.
You go around looking at like a bloody long-standing Spice Museum, as Alan Partridge reference. You know what I mean? It's like kind of like the most like a tank museum. I remember going around thinking this is so boring. But I think we went into a newsagent and like picked up, and it was like one of the 2000 AD collector's specials, and it was of
Oh, it
Nemesis.
was Nemesis.
The,
Oh, yeah, we started
yeah.
well. Yeah.
And I was like, bloody hell. And that really kind of, I don't think I properly got it at the time,
Right.
because I saw like Nemesis, he was the hero, and Torquemada was the bad guy. But upon like a more kind of mature reading of it, when I get a bit older, they're fucking both as bad as each other.
Yeah, exactly.
But
Yeah.
yeah,
And
but
like a
that was the
weird,
introduction to both.
as a kid, that must have seemed like a fucking weird comic strip to you, though, surely, was it?
It was, yeah. I mean, I think that was like a massive jump up from like reading Dandy and Beano and all that kind of stuff, and just being kind of thrown into the deep end of that. And I think it was like just being a news agent and pestering my mum and dad, how can you get this? And then lo and behold, I'm reading it.
We'll give you this sort
But
of weird alien body horror pseudo
yeah.
religious, you know. Yeah, it's a strange one to start
Yeah.
on.
And that's how I kind of got into sort of reading Pat stuff and Kevin. And I think certainly Pat Mills's work has like absolutely stuck with me. I can look back and see comics and work that I've really appreciated and glommed onto, and it's always been like Pat's had a hand in a lot of it.
I've never really thought of it before, because obviously we're friends with Pat. Pat's our friend, you know. He comes on the pod, and we go out with him, and you know, for dinner and stuff. And I've never really—I don't know why—I've never thought of it, but I can see that martial law edge a little bit in your book, actually, man.
Oh, definitely, yeah. There's like the public spirit character. I've got a character in Vanguard, Max Stream, who goes on to be Maximilian. He's very much modeled on like the Superman who's corrupted and runs by his own rules. It's slightly different because my one's obsessed by money and power, and it's slightly different with the public spirit.
It's a
But
strange one. His motivations
take
are strange in this book, aren't they? They are
they
hard to
are.
work out, I think.
There's a moment at the end where, not to get into spoilers, he's going to get married to Celeste, and he's taking questions from reporters just before the ceremony, and one of them asks him like about like if you and Celeste have a kid, that'd be like the most amazing superhero ever. And he's like, it's just, he sneers
He's like challenged by that.
because yeah, he's challenged, but he wants to be the best, the number one, and even his own like progeny, he can't. That's unacceptable.
It's weird.
So
It's strange.
it's a great little touch.
It's so strange. So it's worthy of remembering that this book came out during the t was being written whilst Watchmen was being written. It was being conceived of at the same time, being conceived on at the same time as DKR, and also in its wake has come out books like the Wildstorm Authority and that sort of book, along with The Boys, which is the one that I think probably gains the biggest influence from. Is that something you think as
God,
well, or?
yeah. I mean, like the boys leans heavily on martial law. I don't think that it's one of those things that if someone picked up, especially this run, the martial law, after reading the other stuff, they'd think, "Well, this is kind of similar to the boys or this or that." And it's like, because it started here, this sort of like look at like these corrupted super people, super like, and essentially it's like Pat and Kevin exploring the idea of not looking up to kind of like these figures and idolizing them, like kind of like Christ-like messianic figures that we seem to do as celebrities, and just whatever they do is right.
And I think that's very relevant. I mean, Pat is quite vocal about saying, I think I wrote down a quote from him: "I loathe superheroes as they are the icons of the establishment. How many billionaires do you actually know? He's just a billionaire who beats up poor people," referencing Batman there. Yeah, Pat is quite honest in his how much he dislikes the superhero thing, the whole thing, you know.
Yeah, I can understand like his reasoning and where the way he's coming from. Like when one of your questions was about sort of coming across this and being kind of a bit taken aback by it, because really the net apart from the sort of the Nemesis, the Warlock blip, I was all about like Marvel and DC.
Yeah, I was going to
I
ask you
was
about that,
reading
man.
that.
So, you've obviously, after your 2000 AD experience with these two guys, you continued reading mostly Marvel and DC,
Pretty
I'm going to
much,
say.
yeah.
And I know we've talked a lot about stuff that you've loved, you know, The Punisher and Captain America and all this sort of thing. When was it that you discovered the Martial Law book? Now, you very kindly sent me a picture of your trade paperback, which is the one of the most dog-eared trade paperbacks I think I've ever seen in my life.
I've read it to fuck. I was thinking about it as we was like doing. I was doing the research for this. I thought I might treat myself to the whole thing in one go because I know they put that collection out.
Yeah, it's nice. It doesn't have the crossovers though. So it doesn't have the mask, or I don't think it's got the Savage Dragon or Pinhead in it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's got everything else.
It's got Takes Manhattan and the Kingdom of the Blind.
Yes, it has. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. They're my favourite ones.
Cool. So where did you come across it? Where was it? Where did you first?
It was in Toxic.
Oh, okay. Right. Of course. Yeah.
I didn't realise that it was the Epic run, and then they did a series of comics in Toxic, and Pat had a hand in creating Toxic. Was that right? Am I right in thinking that?
Yeah. Yeah. It is. Yeah.
And I think my mate at school, who was kind of like always on the cutting edge of bringing in the new shit, he sort of showed me Toxic, and I was like, oh, fucking hell. And I was like reading that. I can remember reading The Driver, but Martial Law absolutely stuck with me. And I think we was at a comic shop like maybe a couple of weeks later, and I was like, oh, bloody hell, there's a book of it. And I bought it there and then.
Yeah.
And I thought it was going to be the collected story of what was in being shown in Toxic, which is kind of the zombie one where I believe that's right. He fights the living dead.
I think you're right, man. Yeah.
So like this, I had not come across this one at all.
And so this was back to the origin story, which is there. We'll talk about that. It does contain the origin story, doesn't it? In a very brief way. But yeah. Okay.
Nice. But it's one of those characters you can pretty much jump in anywhere.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
it's pretty self-contained. It's kind of like Dread. Once you kind of get the kind of the idea, you obviously miss a lot by missing stuff. But if you understand Judge Dread, like he's a policeman in the future.
Yeah,
you kind of away you go.
I think that's because Pat came from a history of he didn't really have a history of American comics. He had a history of British comics, and I think that was the classic. Well, even back then in American comics, there was. You didn't really have to follow a character through, did you, to get what was going on? You know, each month or each week in British comics, it would be a different story. You know, as we talked about before, Billy would lose his boots again in a different way. You know, it'd be a different story each week. Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. Okay. So if you had been that Marvel DC fanboy, let's which is a terrible phrase, but we use it anyway.
Yeah.
Did this offend you?
Yeah, I was kind of like, it seemed very adult and very graphic, and I was like young teen. Yeah. So like, there's like lots of sex, tons of violence, and I hadn't been exposed to that before.
Right.
So it was a bit kind of like, oh fuck, I can't let the teachers or the parents.
Right. Okay.
Catch me reading this because it's quite adult.
Yeah, it is.
Obviously there's rape, violence. Yeah. It's all in there. And I was kind of like taken aback for it, and it did alter my view of like how I viewed superheroes from then on, without a doubt. I still had the fond for the idea of kind of like a kind of, maybe I've got aspirations like Marshall or the character, but the idea of a kind of a noble and pure Captain America character who's always in the right fight, fighting the good fight.
Yeah,
I like to have that idealism, but the reality of it isn't. That's not the case.
Yeah. And it's a funny one. Is Martial Law, is Gilmore, which is his real name, is he an idealistic character? He's not idealistic, but is he moral? I don't know. Is he?
I don't know.
No.
He's some ways he's a realist. I mean, we're in the future, which is set in a sand future. There's been like an enormous earthquake, and essentially there's now like a massive slum area.
Yeah.
Where all the superpowered people that have come back from like their version of the Vietnam War, which was the zone, they now go around in gangs, just terrorizing civilians and having massive gang fights with each other.
Yeah, so it's that reflection. It's Vietnam, isn't it? Times 123, isn't it? Yeah, it really is.
It's like that. Yeah, also the idea of back in World War II when the GIs came back. They became the Hell's Angels because you had these young lads,
true,
nothing to do at a time, and they bought like these bikes and then went around in gangs getting into trouble. And this is exactly that sort of metaphor. And there's a part in this initial run of the first six issues that Martial Law doesn't go out to kill all these gangs. He has to keep them in a balance, like an equilibrium. And Danny, one of the aides, says, "Why don't you just kill Suicider and the gangrenes?" He says, "Because if I do that, this other group will move in, and then that group will move over there, and essentially, like, it will just all kick off."
Which is
So he has,
the Batman problem, isn't it, as well,
yeah.
in a way, you know.
So he has to kind of keep the lid on this kind of boiling pot of violence. And but the kind of the tragedy is, for the character, he is one of them. He's a soldier that's come back from the war. And simultaneously, I guess we can get back onto that later when we start hitting the themes up.
The
But
story beats.
yeah.
I think it's worth it. I mean, we could, let's start with that. Shall we start with the story beats and we'll hit some of the themes? Because
Sure.
I think it almost starts on an origin story. There's a moment of an origin story, isn't there? You immediately, almost straight away, get the hypocrisy of the church. You know, you get. But he's called the public spirit, isn't he? Is the character's name. Now, I always wondered whether that was an allusion to the Holy Spirit. You know, Catholic. Are you Catholic or born Catholic? I can't remember.
No,
No,
I think,
I am, and I know
yeah.
Pat and Kevin both are, and I always wonder whether there's that element. And he at one point says in one of the opening pages, he says, "If it's God's will," which I thought, wow, okay, right, this is really getting deep into the sort of the religious iconography, the religious meaning in it, you know, that sort of thing. It's funny actually because the next one I'm doing with Eamon from Megacity, and we're doing Born Again, which has similar sort of Catholic sort of
Gotcha.
iconography in it as well, and this one really, it leans into it in a different way. It leans into it in a downright attack on the church, doesn't it? Which I don't object to too much, but
It
yeah,
is kind of like propping it up, like the super team is called the Jesus League of America,
yeah.
and it's kind of like all of them are kind of adorned in crosses. You got like Red Riding Hood, Purgatory, Whipping Boy, the Black Abbot, and they're all kind of sort of
Yeah.
trying to be like holier than
I
thou,
mean, one's
but it's
basically a
all,
bishop. He dresses as a bishop, isn't
yeah,
he? You know.
it's just an absolute smokescreen, because it goes on like that. There's some fans of the public spirit, sort of like young women, and they call them out to him like a sex object, and they want to kind of be with him, and he sort of says like, "Keep it in your pants for Christ's sake," and they sort of put on this display of sort of like being religious and pure and like and keep like chastity, and it's like these are absolute degenerates.
Behind closed doors, they're just
Behind closed
fucking
doors, they're the
awful.
worst. And it's kind of, I can see where Pat's coming from in that, when this would have totally passed past me when I first read it, but the kind of the hypocrisy of being kind of preached to by people who were just fucking way worse than you would ever be, and just absolutely corrupt in power.
It's the hypocrisy, you're right. That's the word I've written down in my notes as well. It's the hypocrisy of these people and holier than thou, I suppose, is the phrase, isn't it? You know, it really is over these, you know, Joe Public, who they just look down on, and you know, just no interest. They're absolutely. I mean, the true nature of a hero is he actually does something to help people, and they don't really, do they? They just sort of pots
No, they
about
don't.
it, you know.
They're all about themselves. There's virtually no moments in this where public spirit helps people out. There's lots of like propaganda material that says he's doing this, he's doing that, but he doesn't do anything. There's a center which he goes around, which a majority, a lot of, when they kind of like make people into superhumans, there's a large failure rate, and they kind of made mentally deficient or physically kind of
One of them's
crippled.
just got a tail, who will come about and come past in a minute.
And he's walking around saying, "Oh, this is like," trying to kind of like touch them and uplift them so they're cured, but he's done nothing, and it's just a PR stunt. And I mean, the public spirit is like used, the personification of that corrupted figure that you kind of you thought was pure and good, and that's where kind of martial law, his angst and self-hatred
And
flows from.
in the plot, in the words and in the art, we get this this religious hypocrisy. The best immediately, straight away, you get, I think, you know, you're talking about the team picture of them all sort of looking sideways on the audience, and the page that faces it. I'll give page numbers, but I think we've got different numbers. For my page 11, it is, if you're reading in the collected edition, you've got the public spirit, and he lifts himself up above by flying, which is something that not all of them can do. And he lifts himself up above the crowd of heroes, and his head is sort of framed against the circle of the moon as if it was in a window in a church, in a stained glass window. It really is.
So he's like a halo.
Yeah. So he's
being like a godlike figure.
And he's even the positioning of his body.
In the pose.
As if he's on the cross, sort of thing. Yeah. And everyone else is saying just say no. And Sylvester's pretty. I mean, apart from you can't see a nipple because they're sort of slightly to the side, is pretty much naked.
Yeah.
And one of the other heroes is just boobs and a whip. Let's face it.
Yeah.
I mean? Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? Really. It's incredibly strong for that. You know. And it was. Imagine, do you remember that book came out a couple of years ago about Jesus or something, and everyone went nuts for it or something? Has it come out of Ahoy Comics or something like that? And but this is so much stronger, so much
Fuck
more
me,
important.
Yeah, and this was done, what, 20, 30 years ago? It was weird because I was like, looking up on about Kevin O'Neill, and he infamously did a Green Lantern annual with Alan Moore.
Yeah.
And it was rejected by the Comics Code.
Yeah.
And they did hear this story, and they said, "Well, what can we do about changing it so it's acceptable?" And they said, "We can't have any of it. The art style was just obscene."
It was his style that was censored.
Yeah, the style.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it?
Was censored. Yeah. It's that, and to be fair, I can see where they're coming from. It's really, I mean, the whole book writing art is just absolutely brutal.
Yeah.
It's really. Because it's supposed to be, it's offensive and coming at you, and it can be hard sometimes.
These horrible people are offensive. That's the point of them. They are disgusting. They're not like playing by, you know, they're robbing a bank and then giving up. You know, there's more to it than that. There's much, much more to it than that.
Yeah.
So we'll give a little bit on Kevin O'Neill. So Kevin O'Neill, born 1953, sadly now retired. He's just retired from art, I think. Co-creator on Nemesis, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. He began working at IPC at 16. He was the office boy on Buster. Yep. And he started working as a colourist on Whizzer and Chips and Monster Fun. He heard about 2008 and actually asked to be involved, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Martial Law, as we said earlier, with both him and Pat involved, went through Epic, Apocalypse Comics, Toxic, Dark Horse, back to Epic, a novel I think Titan put out. We had some Image Comics involved in it. He's got quite the back catalogue. He worked on Dodgem Logic, which was that magazine that he and Alan Moore and a couple of other people put out a few years ago. Max Zero, Future Shocks, ABC Warriors, Metal Zoic, which is amazing. He worked on The Amiga Men and Tales of Green Lantern. The Green Lantern story was actually published in a non-code stamped book, wasn't it? I think it was in a Green Lantern annual.
There we go.
And he's the one responsible for sneaking in the credits apparently in 2000 AD. So he's one of the first people to start putting credits in British comics.
Oh, okay.
Quite unusual back then. Yeah, I think he's part responsible for that. Yeah, so a great creator. Oh, I just want to go back to something you mentioned earlier as well, Dan, is the about the religious iconography and the religious symbols on the costumes of these characters and elsewhere in the strip.
Yeah.
That's reflective in Martial Law, his own costume, actually, because Martial Law has an upside-down cross on his chin, essentially, doesn't he?
Yeah. That's he's strange. Like the polar opposite to Public Spirit.
Yeah.
Where, like, He in a way, like, he's kind of the Antichrist.
Yeah.
Where the Public Spirit is kind of all about Christ redemption. Martial Law's the polar opposite, with this loathing self-hatred, the inverted cross, the black and red.
And the,
I mean, he's even got it emblazoned in his stomach.
Fear and loathing. Yeah. It always made me feel strange, I think, as well as the... And it always something that when you see cosplayers trying to pull it off, they never quite get right, is the fact he's got barbed wire around his arm.
Yeah.
I always used to think, Christ, he must be hard. Yeah.
It's because he, like, because the procedure they all go through, they can't feel pain. Mm. And, I mean, his costume, he's got, like, the zip slashes down the side of his face across his throat.
Yeah, so there's almost like a false mouth on his throat is the way I always used to look at it. Mm. Just above a big sort of San Fajiro PD badge hanging on a chain, which is a nice touch. He's kind of a policeman from a bondage fantasy.
Yeah.
A little bit, isn't he? You know.
Because it's because it ties into the fact that he hates himself, hates what he does.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to do it. But it's kind of like the only thing he's equipped to do.
Yeah.
He's got all these superpowers, and he's hated by the superheroes because obviously he's the one tasked with bringing them into keeping them in line. And then the irony is that the one person who you think might accept of be accepted of him in a scene where he his girlfriend, God, her name Lynn,
Yep.
she sort of likes, she opens his eyes a bit about the superheroes, and he kind of gets a bit more of a kind of understanding about them. And then he says, well, "What about martial law? He hates him. He goes around killing him." And she's like, "That's the worst one.
Yeah, doesn't she
He's
say he must
the
be some
absolute
kind of
fashion."
homosexual or something, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a weird
And
one because she's kind of a she reminded me a bit of Accident Man's girlfriend. She's like a
God,
protester, isn't she? She's sort of
yeah.
a human rights a little bit yin yang Yorkie protester, which is eventually her downfall, isn't it, later on?
Yeah. She comes unstuck.
Yeah. The thing that I'm there's a couple of things that the costume speaks to upon at the time and upon re-examination is the fact that heroism is tainted. You know, in this book, any
Yeah.
true heroism is tainted, and even the man who we are kind of following through the book appears like this. I mean, he looks like a bondage German SS officer, doesn't he?
Yeah.
There's that element
It's
to him.
definitely tones of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's
It's
tainted for that reason, isn't he? You know.
kind of it without a doubt, like it's kind of just he's an absolute anti-hero, and just the costume is the perfect sort of personification of him hating himself. It's
It's quite a work of art, this, and like you say, it's something that I wouldn't want to see anyone but Kevin O'Neill draw, you know, sort of.
I can't see this working in any other medium.
Yeah, no, neither can I. Yeah,
It's
it would be out of
atomic.
place in a movie, wouldn't it? I think, you know,
Yeah, it just
although I'd
wouldn't.
love to see a movie, it's out of place, I think.
But Pat's even talked. I've listened to a few things where they've talked about doing a martial law film. They're talking about like removing the superheroes and removing the costumes or removing the powers. It's like, well, why bother?
Yeah. Oh, is that, they've had a couple of tries, haven't they? That was one of them, and they
Yeah.
very sort of politically didn't name the person for that one. But I saw them in another interview where they said that McGee had shown an interest and almost signed on to it,
Okay.
and Roger Corman had almost made a movie of it as well,
Wow.
which would have been interesting. Yeah.
There's one where he's quoted as having The Rock
That's right. That's
interest in
right.
playing martial
Yeah.
law. And he can't, I think Pat sort of he said in the interview that he kind of kicks himself that he should have gone for that,
Did you
but
get
I
him?
don't
The
Yeah.
yeah, cool. So as an extension of what we talked about there, that how heroism is tainted, it touches on two things for me here. It touches on what we've talked about before, that superheroes become a religion. I think that's fair to
Yeah.
say. So the false notions of all religions are indicated here in big signposts to say these are not worthy of our worship. You know, these are flawed people, as is the
Yeah.
church of all kinds of churches and whatever it's going to be, whatever religion it is. But also that being a superhero or the worship of superheroes is in itself a prime example of a perversion. It's almost a perversion to be a superhero, isn't it? It's so
Yeah.
twisted, and in moments it's a sexual perversion. You know.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is them going with like massive sexual perversions, like setting up almost theme parks of kind of they just do anything to get a few quid. Like there's things where you can beat superheroes up, have sex with superheroes flying around. It's kind of there's nothing that won't. There's one of the character that says she's like a woman in full red leather, and she says like they're not doing it here, you won't get it anywhere. To like a John that comes up to sort of
That's right.
solicitor.
Yeah.
So that's
There's a
watching
moment at the
out.
wedding as well. I mean, firstly, her wedding dress looks like straight out of a porn film.
Celeste.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is there's the because it, you, we have comparisons to real superheroes, like we talked about the Captain America Superman analogy. But you get, which is increased in the next series, Manhattan, but is
Yeah.
certainly important here. But you get, there's like an Aquaman kind of thing going on.
Yeah. They're all there's like a massive sort of like almost like intergender orgy like in the pool
And they're all sort of
where
removing hair off each other and stuff like that, or alluding
yeah
to it. And yeah, it's very, very strange. I mean, even as a, I don't know, what was I when I read this, probably 18. Even as an 18-year-old, I thought, oh my God, what's that about?
yeah
Understand that.
one of the things as well, like martial law, the flip side of him when he goes back into his regular, he couldn't be more regular.
Yeah,
He
which is the
wears
ideal.
white t-shirt, blue jeans. He's just absolutely, it's kind of like taking that average Joe, like the Puerto Rico to the extreme of being so bland.
He's almost bullied a little
There's,
bit by his partner, isn't he? You know,
yeah,
she's very
she kind of
strong-willed.
he kind of like when they have sex, it's always initiated by the Lin character.
Yeah, and
He's always like return, she jumps on
she's
him.
also hypersexual, isn't she? Because there she sort of flaunts her sexuality, although she's sort of slightly hippie and wears clearly one of his t-shirts in bed. She sort of bends over at the fridge and stuff like that while he's sort of standing there, you know, and he's not in his costume, and he's there's a real difference. There's an inability to act almost, isn't there? You know, where as Marshall Laurie's sort of very pragmatic and will just sort of fly into fits of whatever he fancies, you know, at the time.
But it's Pat being so fucking far reaching and seeing stuff that hasn't even happened yet. That is a trend that you see today of people acting in a certain way, completely oblivious to how the outside world and how reality in inverted commas works. So Lynn is all fine about protesting martial law and these superhero characters. She goes to the worst part of San Futuro, where they've got the rehabilitation center of the superheroes, and protests outside with two other people. And the two guys that are there, they're all wearing pig masks on top of like their superhero suits, and they're just taking the piss. But the two guys are just talking about how pissed they got the night before, and they're not taking it. Lynn's taking it seriously, but they're
Yeah, that's
not. And
right.
then when she removes her mask and said, "Why don't you two fucking pull your finger out?" They go, "Oh, look, that looks better now. You really look like her." And they just went there to see her in the nude,
Yeah,
and
exactly.
like she, this is where she leaves the scene disgusted, and that's where she's then attacked and killed by the sleep man.
Yeah, because she's dressed like that, because she's in that costume, because she's
Yeah,
done it as a
because
sort of almost like a publicity stunt, she thinks, and he's
yeah,
found
to
her.
sort of protest, and just by sort of coincidence, I mean, it's later revealed he didn't know. He like the sleep man's going around attacking and raping these women dressed as Celeste. That's part of the carrot story there, and it just happens that how this is how kind of martial law gets pulled further into it. Initially, he's only after, as you mentioned before, he's only after public spirit, but when this happens, he fucking sights go on, and he's absolutely knows to himself that the public spirit is the
Responsible.
Sandman.
Yeah, he believes it, doesn't he?
Yeah, and he thinks he's like through his going away and coming back, he's come back fucked up, and he's going around at night raping women, raping and killing
So
women.
those who don't know, he went off on a sort of space mission and returned, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's also responsible for, he thinks, killing his previous superhero partner, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So
Because
just
we did
comment.
the deep dive on that research that it mentioned something that I'd never really picked up on previous reads, and it was the Nemesis Star.
Yes, you mentioned
And
me
I
about
was like,
this, yeah.
What's the Nemesis Star? And it was a thing in the 80s where they thought there was like an opposite to the sun within our solar system,
Okay.
and it was something to do with the extinction of the dinosaurs. I know we can look back at it now and think, well, that's it doesn't hold water, that theory. But the idea was Buck was going to be the first person out into space to kind of go and see it, and because of the time dilation, whatever, 2 years passed in his time, but 15 years passed on Earth,
Yes, yeah.
which is relevant to the story.
Yes, because he has, I don't know, there's a son of his that appears, which we'll probably talk about in a minute. Yeah. Right, so we're talking about we just we I mean we're sort of we're jumping about a bit, but we're just going to deal with a couple of other things in the opening. After the Stars and Strippers chapter one page, we get a Celeste lookalike in the sort of underground town again. Have you noticed who she bumps into?
No, who was that? It
This
says, who know?
is the Shadow.
Yeah. It is the Shadow. Of course.
Who
Of
knows what
course.
lies in the heart of men, or whatever his phrase is,
Yeah. And he's got the big nose and
and
the,
the red handkerchief scarf
yeah.
thing. So that's the Shadow. So we get little things. The other thing that you notice that he does a lot, Kev, and I'm not sure how much scripted this is or not, but he puts a lot of graffiti, and a lot of things are written in the background and on signposts, and you know, there's a lot going on in each panel, isn't there? There really is, you know.
Yeah, there's so much. I don't think I presume that he puts this in
Yeah, I'm guessing.
and works with them.
So there's that. So, and also in relation to what we talked about earlier, the sexual nature to this crosses over again with the religious thing, because we get a load of nuns in a gang, don't we, who are all pretty
Yeah.
sexy. I've Being a Catholic
It's
boarding school boy, I never found nuns particularly sexual, I'll be honest with you. And in reality,
I
most of them are not, but you know.
Can, it's, I imagine it's kind of like the nurse thing as well.
Yes. Yeah.
the reality of it and the fantasy are very
That's
different.
very true, and you know that I know
I'm
that.
not saying you can't be a sexy nun or a sexy nurse,
Yeah, if you want
but
to be. Yeah. Yeah.
the fetishization of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the sexual element of it continues throughout, and there's I've just quickly turned to another page here, which is further in on the issue, where you meet She Beast. So She Beast is kind of the slightly more muscular version of the public spirit, and it's actually a lady, and she's doing some heavy lifting. Her and the Celeste character are sort of working out together, and she's
Oh,
asking.
Christ, yeah.
And I remember reading that and being like, thinking, that man's got a small pair of pants on. Oh, it's a lady.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's quite frightening.
Yeah, that is genuinely scary. Because essentially they're talking about like taking drugs to kind of give themselves the edge, steroids to make themselves look bigger. But if you keep doing it, like you got all the side effects of, and that's one of the things martial law starts building up a case on the public spirit, the fact that he thinks he's injecting steroids and then increasing his aggression and sexuality and
Is it called it pumping ions?
libido,
Pumping ions, I think.
pumping
Yeah,
ions.
which is
Yeah.
kind of cool. And then we start encountering the shock troopers from the zone and the different gangs, and one who is it Nuke? Is that, Gangrene? He appears quite a lot throughout it, doesn't he? He's kind of like a regular villain who turns
I
up.
thought his name was Gangrene. It's actually Suicida. The gang is called
Oh,
Gangrene.
right, okay.
That kind of got me.
Yeah.
I was like, really? Oh fuck! I was like, his name's Suicida. I thought it was
And he
Gangrene,
turns up a couple of
but
times, doesn't he? He's got the typical Vietnam necklace of ears. He's got Bullet
yeah.
Man behind him of a character sort of trait. He's got an Iron Man type character. Yeah, they're basically sort of if you watched any kind of straight to video martial arts movie in the 80s or 90s, this would have been the gang that turned up that someone like Jean-Claude Van Damme would have beaten up. Yeah, it's that sort of thing,
Yeah,
isn't it? There's a cyborg element to it.
I think he turns up in near enough the first three at
Yeah, I
least.
think you're right.
He turns
Yeah.
up, him and the gang, and
Yeah.
Marshall just beats them down, and then they slink off. But he, like as we mentioned previously, he doesn't eradicate them because that would cause a power imbalance. So he's only got a stamp on them when they kind of rear up.
Yep. And you also get the appearance of Sorry the Nearly Man, who is also a recurring
Yes.
character.
Yeah, God, yeah. He's kind of like again one of like the failed experiments, and he sort of has some powers but not much, and he's kind of like a superhero
Yeah, and Suicider makes him pull his trousers down and expose his tail.
aficionado.
There's a rumor going around that I have a tail. It's not true.
Yeah. That's not a tail, ladies.
And then we get a lovely shot. I know we're not going to do every page because, like, Christ, we'll be here all night.
No.
But there's the lovely sort of one-page splash shot of Martial Law in his craft, which I really liked.
Yes.
Is that meant to be Batman on the wing?
Yeah, he's kind of like that guy picks up for a flying around taking a
Yeah, he
piss.
is. Yeah.
And he says, I couldn't hold it.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, but that one definitely looks a lot more like Batman than
Yeah, he does there, doesn't he? Yeah.
when you previously see the character or see the character afterwards.
Yeah.
Because the kind of craft he's flying around with is very much like the Screaming Eagles logo of the kind of the black bird with a huge red eye
Yes.
that he, like the shock troopers that went
Yeah.
into like the Vietnam what they go into South America because to quell like a kind of I'm not quite sure where they're
No,
going. It's like I
it's like a
think
jungle
they're trying
warfare
to
thing again,
make
isn't it? Yeah.
yeah they're trying to make superpowers of their own in America. Like you can't be have a power rival in us, so they go in and
Right.
stamp on it immediately.
Yep.
Which obviously has massive political
Yeah.
allegories.
So they come back, and this is the first issue, and it ends on another splash page with Martial Law holding. I remember looking at this, and it says peace pipe on it, and it's actually like a rocket launcher kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And him saying, they're just the symptoms, I'm after the disease, which is the reference to, I think, to the public spirit at that point. Although
Yeah.
we're definitely getting there. Talk a little bit about the covers. I actually found the colour on the cover to issue two not as dirty and grimy as I'd previously seen in the comics. It didn't have that dirt to it.
I'll
Do you know
tell
what I
you
mean?
what, I won't have to Google the
Oh,
covers
it's.
because it doesn't actually have them in this
Oh, they used to
collection.
do that with them, didn't they? So the cover is the one with he's Martial Law is standing on the edge of a building holding a sort of gun stroke grenade launcher in the face of the public spirit, and the public spirit is sort of
Yes.
hovering almost. But it seems a little bit too clean. I'm not sure if it's just the version I've got. I do have the floppies as well, but I can't remember if it was that much different. But it seems a little too clean to me, that one.
It's not very. That's not indicative of the comic.
Yeah,
Vin.
It's not, is it? You turn the page and you get the full on O'Neill effect in the next page, don't you? That just seems a little bit too clean. But then again, they had to sell comics, I suppose, didn't they? If they put some of the madness, they might have put some parents off.
You never shift a copy.
It would encourage the kids, just not the parents. So
it's weird because we mentioned about like this not taking a hold like kind of Dark Knight or Watchmen did. I think because this is a lot edgier.
I think you're right, man. Yeah,
this is slightly more unpalatable.
Yeah,
like the Watchmen and kind of Dark Knight. Like it was challenging stories at the time, but even now the content of this is still challenging. It's like fucking hell. That's heavy.
This is like the fight with the mutants in the pit, in DKR, continuously and done with more aggression to me, you know.
Yeah. There's absolutely no rest, like, of all the worlds like comic creators have spun up and created, I would never want to live in this. It's like hell.
Yeah.
It's like purgatory in San Futuro. It's monstrous. Yeah. I think that's the trouble. Martial law is stuck between two systems. One, the kind of superheroes who are corrupt and decadent.
Yeah.
And the other side is his kind of government, which are enablers who prop these up as kind of like for the masses to look at as like icons and this is what you should be like. And one of the reasons he hates himself, because he fell for that himself.
Yeah.
When martial law goes, so when Public Spirit goes to the stars,
yeah,
he joins up and becomes a superhero to fight in the war.
Yeah.
And he sort of gets to see what behind the curtain. And he fucking hates himself for doing it.
Yeah, and he's in a way then becomes the machine, doesn't he? He then becomes the non-stop beast, the creature that is being created by the government. Yeah, it's interesting. I'd like.
Even then, like at the end, he doesn't get like he's very much against the government. Like there's a bit where he has to kind of bite his tongue when the public spirit's given a large amount of money to the city, and he has to sort of pretend that everything's gravy. But it fucking ain't, and he's still ready to go after him. And even his own men like start turning on him. That doesn't he get an absolute hiding by the shock troopers because he sort of goes up against the public spirit.
Yeah, yeah. He's the bad guy, isn't he? The public see him, and he doesn't care. So he's the villain, isn't he, to the world? Which is the true nature of a hero, I suppose, isn't it? If you can stand up for what you believe is right, although everyone else is telling you it's wrong, I suppose that's the epitome of, in a way, of what a hero can be. You know, but he does it with sort of great darkness, and he's a man beyond broken. Everyone thinks, oh, the Punisher is broken. He's on this war against crime. This guy's a mile past him, isn't he? You know, almost.
Yeah, he has to live in this constant state of purgatory, of not being able to torment him. Like he knows the truth about how fucking despicable these people are, but is kind of got his hands tied on what he can do about it. And he's part of the problem as well, because these superheroes go around committing acts of horrendous violence, and he goes around acts of horrendous violence
to them. Yeah, and is he any better? Yeah, are we what we hate the most? Have we become it? You know, there's that. I wanted to just quickly now, because I know, look at us. I knew we'd go on a while, dude. But go on quickly to a moment, because it's full on images. The pages are packed full of people and tone and action and emotion and all this sort of thing. And then we switch quickly to a moment that is kind of an interview between Martial Law and the Public Spirit. And I love these two pages. Yeah. I sent these to you. So he basically confronts the Public Spirit at a sort of public gathering, and he interviews him, doesn't he? And he says things like, all right, do you have super animal? So he says to him, can you travel back in time? Because he basically says, I can do anything. You just give me a good cause and there ain't nothing I can't lick. You know, the typical Steve Rogers, you know, rhetoric.
Sort of very Reagan kind of
very,
era.
Yeah.
Kind of.
And he says to him, well, can you travel back in time? And he says, no. He says, have you ever discovered Atlantis? And he says, I think you're coming at this from the wrong angle. He says, can you move the Earth out of its orbit? And he says, don't be ridiculous. And he says, do you have any super animal or instinct senses? And he says, look, what about moving through solid objects? And he says, well, I wasn't designed to do that. And he captures it in it. It's almost like comedy. He says, you must at least have x-ray vision. He says, well, not exactly. And then he holds up a card with very small writing on it. And he says, well, can you read this? And it says, do you go around with a bag over your head raping women? And you get a single silent panel from the public spirit. It was just genius. Yeah, like,
just that
perfect. You know.
Yeah.
And I know it doesn't...
He's not used to this level of scrutiny. Yeah. The public spirit.
And he lulled him into a full sense of security by asking him these sort of idiotic, ridiculous questions that get asked him by fanboys all over the world. And then he eventually says to him, well, you're a rapist or a murderer, aren't you? And he says he's on the ropes. And he, you know, it's just... But we find out that he isn't the one. He isn't the one.
No.
Yeah.
It's kind of revealed through the kind of martial laws investigation that he... One of the other superheroes he came up with, public spirit, was Virago, who he had a relationship with and was pregnant. And when he finds out that she's pregnant, it would jeopardize his ability to go on this space mission because by the time he came back, she would be an older woman and he would have a son who would be like 15, 16, 17 years old. So he says, well, you got to abort it because I've got to go on this mission. She said, I'm not doing that. So he tries to kill her.
Yeah.
He thinks he's killed her, and through the majority of the story, you're led to believe that Public Spirit has killed Virago, and you find out that the Sleep Man is in fact his son, his estranged son, who possesses all the powers that he does, and he's been brought up by his mum Virago from day zero to absolutely hate the Public Spirit and want his death, want his downfall. And question for you. Is martial law responsible in some way for what the Sleepman does?
Yeah, by his own inserting his own opinions and attitude in relation to the public spirit. Yes, he is, isn't he? Yeah, so he's just guessed. He wants him to be the Sleepman almost, doesn't he? So he just says he is. And while he's interviewing him, as what you're about to tell me, I'm sure, is that the Sleepman's off murdering someone else, who happens to be his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Sleepman is the personification of what martial law thinks of heroes. Yeah. He's like horrid rapist, murderer. He's like, all the other costumes are like, there's quite an intricacy to the design. There's either colors or kind of like shapes. The Sleepman's just black, all black, except for the sort of metallic Freddy-like claws and the paper bag over his head.
Over his head. It, to me, just shows the disgust that Pat has for these characters. You know, he's so bad he's had to put a paper bag over his head. And we discover the reason he does that is because he's got this sort of putrefying flesh, isn't he? His flesh is... his mask is a reflection of his skin, and it's almost like he's just one big, like, boil almost in his head.
Because as another character that's been, like, abused, and he's brought up to kind of hate himself to be a superhero. And one of the things the Virago character has is, like, these siren powers... that you can kind of influence men's minds. And she kind of essentially poisons him from day one. And she goes, the reason he's going around and attacking all these women dressed up like Celeste because Virago feels threatened by the younger woman that the public spirit is now looking to marry and says, I want you to kill Celeste.
It's weird, isn't it? He's distilled a fractured human relationship into a relationship between superheroes with, you know, the emphasis of like more murdery, more rapey, more dangerous.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, it's fucking grim. Yeah. And then even in the end, like it comes out at the wedding, Sleepman's killed, Danny is killed Virago, and it comes down to like a Virago confronts the public spirit, and the public spirit kills Virago, like just murders her, smashes her face in, and Danny doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
He watches it happen and then decides to half-heartedly tackle the public spirit.
Well, I wondered if that's... I mean, sorry, Matt, go on, sorry.
Go on. He kind of follows, when it all kicks off at the wedding, he watches martial law and then lets himself be seen flying towards where his mum and dad are having an argument.
Yeah.
So he leads martial law to them because the martial law has no idea where they've gone. But he ultimately wants martial law to deal with the public spirit.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And in a way, the Sleep Man is a product is produced into this serial killer, turned into this serial killer by the treatment he has had, and he has such a low sort of self-esteem issue. Even every time he attacks, he self-narrates, "I am bacteria. I'm the lowest form of life."
Yeah.
But I am a superhero, and it's this strange version of a monologue that he gives when he kills and rapes women. It's terrible. Yeah.
It's haunting because he says that every time. Yeah. It's like it goes through these murders and rapes, and when Lynn's off, the panel appears in a frame with him not in it.
Right.
And you think, fuck, like he's here with Lynn, and well, you know where that goes.
So, and this is the most awful rape scene. I mean, it is. You don't see anything. It's not gratuitous. It's done for a reason as part of the story, but it is brutal and it is shocking.
It's brutal.
And
to
show how masterful these two creators are, you get a rape scene and he's doing his flies up with a dead woman at his feet, shouting or monologuing, "I'm the spawn of evil." And one of the sort of weird superhero kind of guard characters says, "Geez, reckon it's the Sleep Man," and the other one says, "More like Zip Man," and you're like, "Right, we're back in the Black Emu again." It's like immediately, and it does fit. It completely fits because of the cheapness of life and the sort of it's just incredibly well done.
Utterly disposable. All life.
And then you get a there's a moment. What's the moment where he says? I think Public Spirit says something like, "You want America's superhero to jack off or something." Is that just before that, isn't it? So it's when, isn't it when I think he wants some DNA from him, doesn't he?
Yes.
He says, "Oh, do you want America's greatest hero to jack off?" And he says, "Yes."
He'd do anything. He's all about like tearing down like these idols and showing people what they really are. That kind of, that's robbed from him at the end. He's taken from his chance to sort of show the world this person you look up to and deified. He's fucking scum. Yeah. And it's that the two of them have a fight, and he uses like a kind of a plastic bullet with kind of like a fear gas in it, because the public spirit can repel metal bullets. Right. And he hits him. And as he's kind of like the weight and enormity of what the public spirit's done, martial law sort of like sets about him, but he doesn't realize there's like a sniper team with the shock
because he wants him to stand trial.
And they kill.
He
wants him to stand trial for the crimes and let people see.
He wants him to remain the hero.
No, and it's kind of, I wrote this down that, you know, I can't find it, but essentially, like, dead. It says, he'll be a legend like Lennon or Monroe or Martin Luther King. So, you know, heroes a lot less trouble when they're dead. So he becomes like, he's the idolization of him and the perfection smoothed away. And I remember a couple of years ago, I put something up on social media about Mother Teresa being an absolute piece of work off of like reading Hitch. And I didn't realize because like there's this massive thing for the Catholic Church saying what a great person this is.
She's now a saint.
And you only have, she's a saint. You only have to scratch the surface and read into what she's done is absolutely horrible. Yeah. Horrible person. And then, but to the majority of people, if you said, "Oh, Mother Teresa's horrible," they'll look at you like
Mother Teresa's almost an adjective at this point.
You're like, you what the fuck are you saying that for? Like, it's like you're insulting someone, like insulting someone close to them. And that's kind of the way the public spirit goes.
And he was they were very prophetic about that, wasn't he, Pat? Because he is creating the fact that the media and the establishment lie to us and it creates false realities and we believe it, you know. And look at it now. Look at the world now. It was only 10 minutes before we came on about you and I like having to second guess every tweet from that we see, you know, as to whether it's actually genuine or not.
Yeah, because I can't. It's almost the point I can't tell now.
Yeah, it is.
Someone tells you up and someone tells you down, and it's like I don't know which fucking
way it
is.
The best example of that is every year that they announce Lou Ferrigno's died, don't they? Every year. You get somebody says he's died, and every year he has to say, "No, I'm not died." But you know, there's a few. It's like when they announced, I think a Twitter account announced that, was it Boris had died recently, and everyone believed it, you know, for about 10 minutes. You know, it's like, what is true and what isn't, and how are we being twisted? And this is that reality turned up, isn't it? And everyone in it is false. Everyone is a lie.
Yeah, living that lie.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. Like, in the end, he kind of. There's kind of a glimmer that he's kind of like come to peace with himself a little bit, but the ending's very bittersweet because he doesn't get anything that he wants. He's lost his lover. The person he was going after just ends absolutely tragically with kind of like the support circle around him, because all throughout the book, he's kind of like talking to Danny, who is the public spirit's son, and Mrs. Mallon, who works in the corner shop, is Virago, and he pops in to see them all the way through the story. And it's kind of, he doesn't have much at the
Oh,
end,
how much of
martial
a
law.
lord is reality, as an everyman, which he's meant to be in a way. Yeah, it definitely is, yeah. Right, moving on slightly to the next section I wanted to ask you about was we get an appearance of a group of superheroes or group of supervillains. They are brilliantly named as always. I'm going to read them out. There's nine names: Wrecking Crew, Suicides. I like that one. Brute Force, Neighborhoods, California Bastards. I like that. Skin Jobs.
That's
So these are all the
brilliant.
names of the gangs. Skin Jobs, Group Therapy, Bad Energy, and Ammo Zoner. And there's a character called the Betrayer, whose real name is Judas S. Carriot. And he's the first real time you see him, he's actually shoved a gun through someone's face to kill him. And this got me thinking a little bit, and I was thinking, I mean, they're great and they look amazing and they're greatly, they're caricatures and they get a beating and whatever happens to them happens to them. But it got me thinking about the anti-establishment nature of both Kevin's work and Pat's work. And we spoke to Pat many times about this, the fact that he is the defiant voice against the bullies. And bullying in a weird, not in a playground way, but in the bully boys of authority and the establishment and the villains and the bad guys on every street corner, it's about bullying, it's about standing up. And in a way, I think martial law is that, again, is that single person who stands up to bullies in this book, strangely.
You're right. There's a it kind of he gets kind of paralleled with martial law, Judge Dredd, but there's a difference between Judge Dredd, where Judge Dredd is the system. Martial law works for the system, but he doesn't want to be part of it. He kind of like he's stuck between the two. So yeah, the kind of the tragedy of that character kind of it's really strong, works
It does.
throughout. It's one of those books I can't recommend enough if
And
people haven't
mate,
seen
we
it.
could talk about this 4 hours and not touch the sides on this one, I've got to tell you.
Yeah, definitely. God, there's so much of it. I mean, I just opened up a page there where public spirit's talking in front of a church, and there's a cross behind him. And on the stained glass, it's like Jesus punching the devil, and they're both wearing capes, and it says Jesus was a superhero. It's this. Every panel is packed. It was packed to the gills with stuff.
And in the same way that Watchmen was as well, it's a whodunit. There's a mystery to it as well,
This is like a kind of almost like a procedural thing where kind of martial law is trying to gather evidence, and there's a multifaceted like bits of the plot going on, but it works when you read it back and you know what the revelations are. So yeah, I can see why it's done like that. It's really well crafted. It's a solid, yeah,
A
absolutely
really
solid.
solid story and multi-layered in many ways. I'm going to ask you, I've got a couple of questions now. So I tend to sort of have a
Sure.
few questions for you that when we reach the midpoint, and we've described big chunks of the book, and we can always go back and look at some other stuff. But I want to ask you a couple of questions. So Pat has very vocally said that he doesn't like writing superheroes. And then now let's change the word superheroes to capes, caped characters. I actually think he writes some of the best caped characters here. And I've
Yeah,
said
he
this to him.
does.
I said, I actually think, you object to writing them, but I actually think you write some of the best ones, some of the most realistic ones. What do you think?
I agree. I think Pat maybe thinks of superheroes of that kind of ideal of like what this book says about them, and that's how he sees them. I see superheroes differently. But Pat can do characters, fascinating, interesting, multifaceted characters, and I think wherever he turns his hand to, he can do. So turning them to superheroes here, or the hatred of them, this is not like a kind of deconstruction of superheroes. It's like looking at them another way, but they're still very valid,
I think
and
that
I don't really
deconstruction
have
is,
too much
I think
time
that
for.
deconstruction phrase is used too much, and I don't think it applies here. It's just another
Yeah.
way of telling a
N
story.
not at all. No. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of a lot of deconstructive stuff because a lot of the time it breaks stuff down and then leaves you with nothing. Like just I will always go on about The Last Jedi, but that broke down what Star Wars was. And at the end of the film kind of said, well, there's a little bit of Star Wars bit at the end. But okay, you've kind of broken down what it is. and you've built nothing back. So where do you go from here? So, but yeah, the Pat's kind of way beyond that. This is, yeah,
I
very
think
well
you're right,
done.
man. I think you're right. And the other thing I wanted to say is I actually think there's such a an atmosphere to the books that he creates and the situations he creates that I almost see it as if I'm going to pick up a Pat Mills book to read, and we've read most of his stuff, the I actually find in the majority, I think you can discount Charlie's War to a certain extent, but I think in the majority there's a certain feel to it. I know, and I'm not even saying that I'm not saying they're the same stories. I'm not saying that emotionally they're the same beats or anything like that. But there's something about them. There's an atmosphere about them that I find interesting. And this, if someone told me that Accident Man grew up to become Marshall Law, I wouldn't call them a liar. If someone told me that
No.
Slane was a an a was a was the great 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 whatever grandfather of Accident Man, I wouldn't call them a liar. You know, it's almost
No.
like, or maybe Marshall Law went and fought in the Mars Wars with the ABC Warriors or something like that. I wouldn't call them a liar either. There's
Yeah.
a through line for a lot of these characters. A bit like something like Michael Moorcock's Eternal Champion or something like that. It's a similar sort of thing
Yeah.
for me.
They've all got like a slight ostracization
Interesting.
from
Yeah.
what their society or what they are, and they're slightly alienated, but they've all got a kind of very powerful voice or something about them. Even like Mike Fallon, the Accident Man, it's kind of he doesn't really have any morals, and he does things for money, but he's sort of out there as a character. It's fascinating. Again, that's another one I could talk about
Yeah,
for a
me
long
too.
time, because that's a
Yeah,
brilliant
I think
one.
you're right. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And they're from completely different worlds, literally. But there's something about them that
Yeah.
I just find interesting.
Absolutely
Yeah.
magnetic. Yeah, I'm just
Yeah.
drawn to it. It's weird that reading this book after so many years, I've read it, I like turned my eye on it and said, right, I'm going to try and deconstruct this a little. Got way more
Yeah,
out of
me
it.
too. Yeah, it's when you could.
Because we initially were talking about Dragon's Claws, and I read that through, and I was like, there's not enough here. It's a fun comic, don't get me wrong, but there's no subtext. There's no. It's just what it is. It's a fun comic.
It really is, isn't it? There's so much. We could do one issue and spend a couple of hours on it with this book. I think, you know, we really could. I think we were
Yeah,
going to do the whole
agreed.
thing, weren't we?
Yeah.
But you said, oh, should we just do the first six issues? Because I think you were feeling sorry for me. But yeah, we end up doing that, see.
We'd also have to gloss over so much. It would be like, I'd rather kind of like try and do a little bit of a deeper dive on. To be fair, I think like you said, we could talk about this for hours, but there's a lot to it.
There's a few other things. I thought we could talk about the virility. There's an element of virility in this, isn't it? There's an element of steroids. There's an element of male performance as part of it. There's the women are hypersexualized and the men have to be hypersexualized as well. It's almost like a competition, between men
Yeah.
and against the women who,
Constantly one upping each other, and sort of especially the superhero characters. I mean, when Marshall Law goes back to like the Joe character, his alter ego, he's an absolutely average guy. No bulging muscles, anything. And even as Marshall Law, he's not that big. He's like a regular dude.
Especially when he comes
He's
up
not.
against the
I know
public
that
spirit later,
changes.
but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Public Spirit grows. He's better part of 12 foot
He
tall.
becomes the Hulk towards the end, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's kind of like does the old Slane war spasm.
That's a good
Like his
point.
whole body's like transforming into. I presume that's kind of like Kevin O'Neill sort of like trying to show the monstrosity of him
Yeah, to a
to the
certain extent,
character. Like, this is what he
And
is.
isn't that part of him jacking up as well? Which, to be fair, mate, is one of my favourite pages ever. Is the first page? Is it issue 4 where he's sitting on the toilet jacking up?
Sitting on the toilet, it's got a huge metal like cannonball, and he's shooting up, and it's
And that was a commentary on bodybuilding at the time as well, wasn't it? That was a commentary on, what did we have at the time? It was, I think, Total Recall had just come out and stuff like that. And there's these people who were like clearly pumped up on something left, right, and center at Blockbuster, weren't
Well,
they?
it's also the thing that fucking Bill Hicks was had a real problem with Hulk Hogan. All the wrestling stars, the fact that they were sort of like stolen these values of drinking your milk and eating your vitamins, and they were fucking like roided up to the bollocks. And as if you look at any documentary back now, like they were substance abuse, this a different sexual partner every other day, just
It's a bit like us
but
lot from
then
the
like
ACP podcast, similar to that.
Then you get like these things of them. I'm the real American with a flag flying behind them, and
Yeah, and they'd appear with a
yeah,
fucking eagle or something. Yeah, you're right.
yeah.
That's a good point, man. Yeah, I like that. Also PTSD. So also the other thing is post-traumatic stress disorder. So it's clear that martial law is suffering from it. Everyone is suffering from it a little bit in this world. The world is so terrible, and everyone is just surviving, and they are finding solace in things like drugs, things like sex, things like hero worship. You know, it's do you know what? It's the way I thought the world was going before this lockdown. I like to think that everyone has sort of discovered a bit of, like, you know, oh, I haven't read that book. Yeah, there's a bit
Humanity.
more of humanity. Yeah, right. Just chasing the next comic, the next movie, the next Netflix series, the next cool food to eat, the next band, you know, the next YouTuber. And we've sort of, I think occasionally we need to put a pause on stuff. And this is us again, isn't
Just
it? Yeah,
slow down.
it really is.
Yeah,
Yeah.
take a breath. I mean, because like with Sound Future, that's like it's been ripped in part, and there's no reconstruction, there's no remedy. It's just kind of patch it up and on we go. And that's a metaphor for the book of just don't worry about that shitty bit. We'll just carry on going. But it's a fucking problem.
I mean, we've done over an hour now, man, but is there any little moments you'd like to talk about? Anything that because you've done a read through and I know you've done some notes and everything. Is there anything you'd like to mention? Yeah.
Yeah, there's stuff like when you flash back to the origin of Danny,
Yeah.
and you see like problems of him kind of growing up as a superhero. And there's always one panel that stuck with me as a kid, and that's when he comes across a realization like he's got superpowers, and you see him like this kind of like super muscular heroic figure, and he's got like this money belt with a dollar sign, and he goes, "I'm a superhero. Where's my mansion?" And it was like this kind of like ideal of this super pure characters, and they've got lots of money, and it once again Pat's vision of superheroes coming through there. And then his mum, because he him and his mum live in squalor, they've got no money, and
Exactly. Yeah, so strange. Yeah. And another bit, which is similar to what you're talking about there, which is an exploration of the piss take on the fucking ridiculousness of some superheroes, is the moment, I think it's in the last issue off the top of my head, and it's the bit where Martial Law is watching the crowd, and out from the crowd walks a man with white hair, huge shoulders, and he's just got a pair of glasses on. And it's it, Pat switching baits you around this, because you think, well, that's the public spirit. He's just got a pair of glasses on like Superman wears, and no one recognizes him. But of course, Martial Law, being the lone sane thought, the lone sane voice in the world, sees him as being like public spirit, so he follows him. And then, of course, it turns out it's not him, it's a lookalike the public spirit has used to get away with. Yeah.
It's obviously been set up to
Yeah.
another one other thing is when like they got the superhero theme park, and kids can go in and do this ride where they're the reenact the shock troopers
Yeah.
going in, and it's very reminiscent of I'm guilty of doing this too, of video games where you can reenact moments in World War
Right,
II or the Vietnam
okay.
War,
Yeah.
and everything becomes like this is entertainment, shooting people and like glossing over the monstrosities of actually what happened, and it
Yeah.
becomes sort of like packaged and sanitized, and
And
it's all
how far do
fun.
we go with that? I mean, how far do our lives lead, you know, where we need that, and actually killing the people who were killed on the beach, how realistic does it become? Actually, you know, sleeping with the women, you know, actually performing the murders of murderers, you know, it's that's that acceleration of,
For me, it's only
yeah, I think
time,
right, man. Yeah.
because if you made a video game, it wasn't able to of World War II a couple of years after the fact, people would be
Yeah.
crying out. But now we're so far away from it, I can say like modern events, and I say we could make a video game, and people would laugh, think that's monstrous, or you
Yeah.
wouldn't do that. But then you get a couple of years down the line, and you're have
Yeah.
that. So it's I've
And
no
another
doubt of
book we
that.
talked about, and the one, because you read it after I talked to Tom Stewart about it, is Jeffrey Dahmer. How far are we away from a video game, a VR game that allows you to be Jeffrey Dahmer and kill the people he killed? You know? And would after a
It's just
brief Twitter storm, would the public actually be fucking bothered? Because I think we're kind of a cult to it now.
you can play games as
Can
serial
you? I didn't realise
killers.
that. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, there's not like it's
Right.
fictionalized, but it wouldn't take too much of a kind of if you did it a certain amount of time in the future where like the statute of limitations has expired, or there's no family around to pursue any kind of criminal case or kind of legal action. What's to stop someone doing
Yeah.
something like that? It's messed up, but again, is one of the myriad of themes that the book touches on. It's
So it's a.
it's amazing. There's still stuff to say
That was
now,
my first
and
question of the. I've got a little list of questions I usually end up with, and one of them was how relevant it is, and it still is incredibly relevant. And this should be an evergreen. This should be like Watchmen, and this should be like The Boys now. And it's a shame that it's not more widely read. It's very
Yeah, it is
loved by a lot of
frustrating.
people, but it should be, bestseller.
But it's kind of, as we alluded to before, there's kind of like a lot of it can be quite distasteful for the average reader. Like, I wouldn't have this on the table with Watchmen, Martial Law, and V for Vendetta, like in Waterstones, for instance, because someone might pick up and say, fucking hell.
I love on the last page, he's talking about bits we liked. I love on the last page where he's visited his girlfriend's, he visited Lynn's grave, and he walks away and he's left a load of, they're kind of meant to be trading cards, but they're actually just horrific trading. One's like a rape of a superhero about to rape someone. One's of a shooting someone through the head, and one's of like the classic Agent Orange, where it was dropped in Vietnam and it disfigured the kids when they were born. This is like Siamese twins who are joined at the groin. It's like awful, and he leaves them on her grave, as if to say.
There's like they put out these public spirit cards, and then like there are these kind of counter movements to put all these fucking horrible ones out to show the realities. And I always thought that was him kind of like just trying to leave that behind of kind
Okay,
of,
interesting.
I don't know. There's a lot to read into that, like those
Well,
last
maybe
couple of
that was
pages.
her. That was
We
her
might
point,
maybe.
wasn't it? She wanted to bring down the establishment.
There was that one thing, that one page I sent you, and I've reread it
Oh
fucking
yeah,
loads of
what page is
times.
that? Which
I
issue was that
can't.
in? I can look at it on my phone actually, because you sent it through, didn't you?
I think
Oh,
it's
okay,
two.
right.
It's just after he saved the sorry, the nearly man,
Oh
whatever that chap's name is.
yeah.
So he saw the gangrene, and they've come across like a victim of the Sleep Men, that's Celeste. She's like a kind of a stripper or something, and he catches her and kills her. And it goes through the panels, and it starts like the worst of all, he gave us power over pain. If you can't receive pain, you want to inflict it. See what you're missing. To you're capable of anything. And he pulls the bag off of the girl's head because the Sleep Man sticks the bag on her head before throwing off a building. He says, "I knew it wasn't sorry. The guy who did this was a real hero, and I can't
Yeah,
understand
no, I
it.
don't understand that. Now, is that his?
I've read it several times.
Is he caught up in the?
Does he mean real hero? Real heroes, and this is what martial law thinks of real heroes. This is what they do.
Yeah,
I
so
don't
he's saying,
know.
well, this is what
Or is
people
he?"
think is a real hero. Is it? Does it? This is a real hero. This is. That's what he's saying. I don't know. It's a funny one. I've reread that, and I've flip-flopped on what I thought it was about.
Because it seems to be about counter, it seems to be almost like he's endorsing what's happened to this woman, and I know that wouldn't be the case,
Is it
so
sarcasm? I think on
I
this
don't
I said
know.
was could it be sarcasm? I suppose is the only thing I can think of.
Maybe.
It's a strange one, isn't it? But that goes to prove that he isn't a completely fixed guy. He's not like Superman. He doesn't know the answer to everything. He's not Batman. He's none of these sort of characters. He's a conflicted person. He's come back with PTSD. He's washed himself out and has turned into this hard creature when he puts a costume on. It's strange, isn't it? Yeah, and which leads me into the sort of the final theme really we were going to talk about is the blurred morals. It's this the, everything is wrong in it. Everything that happens in it is wrong. The from the heroic actions of murder to the villainous actions of murder to the society they live in to everyone they encounter pretty much is wrong. Is not
Wrong, messed up.
and they're not two dimensional. They're actually fleshed out in a way. They're actually, Public Spirit is probably one of the greatest comic villains.
He's really kind of understandable because like I feel like I can look into the world today and see people just like that.
Oh,
And like if doing some
you can turn
foul-ass
on the
shit.
telly and what's that for when we're fans of Christopher Hitchens? What's that famous Hitchens quote that is you can always if there's a religious man on television decrying the evils of homosexuality, you're 10 minutes before he's on his knees in a public toilet. And it's not, I'm not saying that it, compared to homosexuality.
That's almost a cliche now
Isn't it?
when you get some like religious preacher saying on about the evils of homosexuality, and give it a couple of months' time, and you find out like he's got like a dozen Grindr accounts and paid people for sex.
And it's like, and you get that with this. Everyone will let you down. Everyone is wrong in some way. They are completely amoral, if not immoral. and they're just doing stuff for their own gratification constantly. Yeah.
And like they weaponize martial law's post-traumatic stress disorder to keep his fellow, what used to be his compatriots, in line. And they hate him.
Yeah, that is true. And they do what they do with everything these days, is everything is weaponized. Sex, drugs, consumerism, the police, the villains, what we think of them, the news, you know, the media. Everything is weaponized to push you towards one thing. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, you know I'm not, but everything is sort of pushed you towards a theory, and this is it from 32, 33 years ago. Yeah, amazing. Yeah.
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 It's also about the kind of the muddy in the waters of like what you think's right and wrong, and like I think that's wrong, and then someone will post and publish loads of other stuff that tells you that's right, and he goes, well, maybe it is right, and then there'll be half another dozen things tells you why that was wrong, and you should think differently, and you think, fuck's sake.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It is really interesting, man. We could talk about this forever, and we have done. We have talked about this forever. Yes. And we've talked about it, and it's
supposed to be an hour.
But the so a couple of things we'd talk about. So from here onwards, it becomes Martial Law Takes Manhattan, which was the next series or one shot. I think it was a series or one shot. I can't remember now. One shot. And that was going to be. I don't know if you know this. It was going to be Martial Law versus the Punisher. Pat didn't want to use Frank as a character, so it was kind of changed to the Persecutor. And it was it's a strange one, and it's again that he attacks Marvel characters there. He says, you know, this is hypocrisy of these characters. Kingdom of the Blind was a series that was disliked by some creators.
Batman.
Yeah, exactly. But a big champion of it was Jim Lee, who loves martial law, believe it or not. I think we've had this from Pat. He was telling us over dinner. He was saying that they wanted to create a new series, and it was on the cards. And I think Pat had pitched them by saying, right, here's the image you want. Martial Law is standing on a stack of Batmans, all of whom he's killed. And I think Jim Lee went for it. And I don't know why it fell out of bed, but I think he did eventually fall out of bed. It was a series of... as we said before, it jumped about. There was a Savage Dragon crossover, which was black and white. There was a Mask crossover. There was a Pinhead sort of Clive Barker universe crossover as well.
Yeah.
It jumped about. There's these two novellas, which I think are in a book. You can still get it on Amazon, I think, called Martial Law Origins, I believe it's called. I own it. But it's two stories, and it's got some illustrations by Kevin O'Neill in it as well.
He goes to space, doesn't he, with a Public Spirit Jr.?
Right, okay.
There's always in space, and it's like a kind of Aliens homage.
Okay. Right, yeah.
That's another good one. There's like the Public Spirit Jr. is an absolute shit as well.
It's great, isn't it? It really is. Good.
He kind of, Martial Law kind of, his edges become a bit softer and rounded when he gets, Pat takes him in a bit of a different direction. But when it starts initially very strong and very kind of, and then Pat just has a lot more fun with the characters.
There's
a couple
of interviews you can find online. There's one interview at Gosh Comics, which is Pat and Kev being interviewed by somebody from Gosh Comics. And it is, you can see what a laugh they have making this. They're absolutely in fits.
Yes.
Yeah, now they both individually and together say it's one of the best experiences they've ever had making comics. And they just like, they get together to come up with the stories and they chuckle for hours about what they're going to do, which I kind of think is cool.
They own all the rights as well.
I think
fantastic. Publishing, apart from in some
they,
media.
So they own the toys and the movies and the TV and all that sort of thing. So, yeah, it'd be nice to see. It'd be nice to see a well-made movie if they could do it. I'm not sure if they could. I got a feeling it would be a mess of CGI.
You couldn't make
it?
This. Yeah, you couldn't make this into a fucking film.
Yeah.
Go out. I wish there was kind of material films that could be made for a kind of an audience would appreciate it, but it always get grabbed by the wrong audience.
Yeah, somebody would jump on something.
Weaponized, as you mentioned earlier.
On Twitter from one panel, there were people weren't aware because they didn't have the brains or hadn't bothered to read the rest of it. You know, so that's a shame about the world these days. But yeah, so that is Martial Law. Thanks, Dan. We're going to pause here for one of our sponsors.
Pleasure.
And I'm going to ask you a little bit about your current work. So we've got the sponsor back from last week. Forget famine, war, Hitler, Mao, or dead naming. The biggest crime against the human condition is being bored on a Sunday afternoon after having watched everything you fancy trying on Netflix or Pornhub. Being bored sucks. So why not head down a grotty, the grot, down to the grotty end of a terraced house in Colchester and have sex with an overweight, stinky lady with a tramp stamp, whilst her hairy-shouldered husband watches and eats a potted meat sandwich? Let's all be swingers. Colchester is actually a nice town.
Recommend that one.
Swinging parties, apparently. Okay, yeah, we're good. Oh, good. Yeah. You like a potted meat sandwich, don't you? Yeah.
The smell put me off, but, you know.
So, Guns, what have you got on the go at the moment, dude? So, you're the new issue of Vanguard?
I'm currently, Vanguard 18. I'm currently drawing and updating that as we go. You kind of inspired me. I'm going to print this issue as a single.
Oh, good.
And I think send it out to some people and just...
Oh, mate, I love that. I'd love to see it. Just with a little corner. You need a corner box and all that stuff on it, I reckon.
Yeah.
That'd be brilliant.
All that stuff.
Yeah. And it's a nice little thing, like a little promotional tool for the site as well, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, I mean, like, kind of, I constantly question why kind of I do the updating on the site. And it is more of a promotional tool because people get to see it and read along. You can comment on the site. I can interact with readers. But then you get the double hit if people want to read it in when it's collected or, in this case, a single issue. So it's kind of, the website is basically one long promotional tool, like talking about a comic. And really, I'm only interested in making a comic and getting people to read it. The marketing... Every single other aspect that I don't give a shit about, but I have to do it.
No, the love, you can see the love on the page around it, man. It's you know, it's not that. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
And I have to say, I love the trades. What's it, the third trade you put out now? I've got them on the shelf here. Love, they look great. Yeah. Really good.
Thanks, man.
So where can people get those, dude?
You can read the comic at vanguardcomic.com, and all of the trades are available through Comic House.
Yeah. Do you have them on a site or is it just through Comic House?
Just through Comic House at the moment. I need to kind of set up a storefront, but it's so easy to do it through Comic House.
And the other thing is, so you finished the art on El Marvo now, is that right? Or
El Marvo, yes, all but done. I've just got to finish off doing a bit of the lettering, and it's all ready to rock and roll. I think we're just going to talk with Ben and Luke. We were trying to get that kickstarted when this, literally the week we kicked it off, the lockdown kind of happened, and it fucking threw everything into a bit of a tailspin, and the numbers we were getting were just tragic.
You hit it exactly. I said, look, this I think if it would have been like a week later or 2 weeks later, it would have done gangbusters. But everyone was literally in a situation where they thought, well, I might not have any money in a month, I suppose, was the problem, wasn't it?
What the fuck is going on? But we might have been left it for a week and it'd been fine, but we kind of got a bit shaky legs and there was so much uncertainty. We just said, look, let's just pull this back for now.
We'll get funded easy.
There's nothing lost.
So, I mean, for those who don't know it, it's a Lucha. Is it Luchador? Is that what they call him? Lucha of the Wastelands of the Apocalypse, sort of thing, isn't it?
He's kind of like, he's kind of been put in cryogenic stasis. You don't know why yet in the story. And he wakes up in the far flung future where, like, humanity's on his knees and it's like an apocalyptic wasteland. And he comes out as the savior to sort of lead the remnants of humanity against. An evil guy called Socrates.
Right, cool. Looks great, man. Looks really good. Yeah, the boys know
what
they're doing.
Cheers, dude.
And what else you got on the go? Have you announced your work on that spaceship one? Has that been announced? I can't remember.
Yes, it's been announced. That's issue 3 for the
Spark. Yeah,
the Spark.
That was great, mate.
For Ion Eagle.
That was an immediate yes from me. As I'm one of the, I go edit that, and as soon as we saw it, me and Aaron, we thought, this is what we need in here. This is brilliant. So it's like a dogfight in space, essentially. It's kind of Top Gun in space.
I wanted to kind of do like a kind of Top Gun in space with kind of a young lad blasting around. Even I kind of nicked the Iron Eagle from Martial Law because he's pumping ion. I got Iron Iron Eagle and changed it to Ion Eagle.
Cool. I didn't realize that. Yeah, good.
So fans of the film Iron Eagle, which was kind of like a cash into Top Gun back in the 80s.
Yeah.
There's quite a few Iron Eagles, and that's the same thing.
Days of straight to VHS that we remember.
Yeah. You don't have to dig too far into my stories to find the 80s reference nestled underneath.
Goodo. And so that's brilliant. So there we go, another one in the tin. Episode 17.
Yes.
So hopefully you got something out of that. Please go and buy this book. It's brilliant. It is absolutely amazing. It's on
Yeah.
Comixology. You'll find it somewhere. I'm sure you can. You can normally find me over at neverironanything.blogspot.com. You can buy my comics at neverironanything.bigcartel.com. Follow me on Twitter at Ezo. Yes, Ezohyez. If you want to listen to a proper podcast from me and Dan say boobs a lot more, go to Awesome Comics. podbean.com or on a podcast catcher of your
Yes.
choice. And so did you want to give out your social media and your shop again and stuff like that? Yeah.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Thanks, man. Excellent. Brilliant. I was really looking forward to this
Cool.
one. I think we did. We could probably do another couple of hours, but I think we've done it far. I think we've done it proud there. I always think
Yeah.
if Pat listened to this or Kevin O'Neill listened to this, what would they think? And I think they'd dig it.
Hope
I
you
think they'd
go.
dig it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, yeah. I'd love to hear anyone who's read the book and that
What
page
do you think?
panel sequence where
Yeah,
we
that's a
were
good
kind of,
point.
yeah, what
What
do you think?
does it say to you? Yeah, I might ask him. I might ask him. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's the only thing that I'm like, I can't get this,
Yeah.
can't get it, but I'd love to know
Yeah.
what that's about.
Good. All right, man. I'll see you soon. Take it, geezer. Take
Take
it,
care,
mate.
Tony.
Bye.